This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
Conservationists argue that lifting the ban will see elephant numbers decline. The CASA countries are pushing for the right to start trading in ivory, a motion which will be tabled at the upcoming CITES meeting.
That's reporter Martin Ngwenya on a proposal by six African countries to resume elephant hunting. Details coming up. Also, French President Emmanuel Macron is urging a ceasefire in Tripoli. And shop owners in Khartoum are hoping the ouster of longtime President Omar al-Bashir will boost the economy, which has labored for years under shortages and sanctions. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. South Africa's Electoral Commission counted votes today, the day after a parliamentary poll that was expected to be the toughest test yet for the long-ruling African National Congress. Initial results showed the ANC ahead, but with a much slimmer lead than in previous elections. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
This was predicted to be a dramatic vote for the Rainbow Nation, which is marking 25 years after the end of apartheid. As election officials trudged through millions of votes Thursday, they announced they would urgently conduct an audit into allegations that some citizens may have voted more than once by removing the indelible ink placed on every voter's thumb. Officials say four people had been arrested for double voting. Political analysts gave mixed reactions to the audit announcement. Ralph Mateja says he is concerned the move could delay results and have serious consequences.
It's a big deal. We have not seen this before. We're opening floodgate because if you start doing all this audit, everybody else is going to complain. And when you hear that election results are no longer going to be announced on Saturday and when, for me, it's a crisis.
Analyst Angelo Fick says he is less concerned.
The audit that's just been announced by the ISC, I think, is a measure of their confidence in the fact that their systems have worked. So they're fairly confident that there has been no problem and will now seek independent confirmation of that.
In the most populous province, Gauteng, the ISC's Boitumelo Monaki told VOA that officials were responsive to concerns about possible fraud.
I can confirm that counting is going well at our voting centres around the province. And then where there are cases of fraud whereby double voting is being reported, the Electoral Commission is requesting political parties to bring evidence of that so that the matter can be investigated.
The long-ruling ANC is expected to win the greatest number of votes, followed by the Opposition Democratic Alliance and the upstart far-left Economic Freedom Fighters Party. Corruption scandals and the sluggish economy have tainted the ANC's image and led some voters to defect. What surprised many pollsters was the success of the Afrikaans-speaking VF Plus party, whose English name is Freedom Front Plus. The party's aim is to create a homeland for the nation's white Afrikaans-speaking minority. The party surged into fourth place in early counts, eclipsing its 1% take in the 2014 election. Fick.
It is, I think, an electoral surprise, but it isn't a political surprise, that the Freedom Front Plus has increased its share of the vote in South Africa. We have seen a growing disaffection among people who identify in conservative circles and on the far right with the way in which the official opposition and other parties that they may have supported have behaved over the last 5 years.
Election officials assured voters they will be able to release final results within the 7 days allowed by law. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
The ongoing protests in Sudan have focused on political reforms and a demand for a civilian rule. However, shop owners in the capital are hoping the ouster of longtime President Omar al-Bashir will also boost the economy, which has labored for years under shortages and sanctions. Ruud Ilamendorp reports from Khartoum.
We are in the living room of jeweler Hamid Ahmed while having breakfast. On a big round table, there are plates with bread, cheese and olives. Both Hamid and his seven children are enjoying this daily pleasure. Under Sudan's former president Omar al-Bashir, it was not easy for Ahmed to make enough money to put food on the table for everybody. But the cost of living under food and fuel shortages and 70% inflation sparked a revolution that removed Bashir from power and raised hopes for economic change. Ahmed is smiling when he tells how he feels about the revolution. He says that the Sudanese saying is, the air came. He adds that he feels better now because the people can work without anyone against them. In the old Arabic souk in central Khartoum is a maze of narrow streets with clothing shops, with men sitting in front of them waiting for clients, drinking tea. Before Sudan's military ousted Bashir on April 11th, traders here were stressed by economic problems, but also lived in fear of the secret police. While having a cup of tea, trader Hassan Mohammed tells how life was. He says before the revolution there was no cash money, no freedom of speech and no rights. He says people were afraid to talk about politics. Bashir's removal and ongoing protests for civilian rule have inspired the people of Sudan and raised new hopes for traders like Ahmed. He says prices have improved and he hopes this market will keep improving after the revolution. The fruits of Sudan's revolution include billions of dollars in aid from the Middle East and a chance that the United States could lift a state sponsor of terrorism label, freeing access to loans. Since Bashir's ouster, the Sudanese pound has nearly doubled in value in black market trading against the dollar. But while Sudanese jeweler Ahmed looks forward to better sales, like the protesters, he also hopes for a civilian-led government and a better future for his children. Ruth Elmendorp for VOA News, Khartoum.
French President Emmanuel Macron is urging a ceasefire in Tripoli as the head of Libya's UN-backed government continued his four-nation European tour. Macron's comments, which claimed there's no military solution in Libya, came as Libyan Prime Minister Faiz Sarj said he was willing to go back to the peace process. But Sarj claimed that Eastern Commander Khalifa Haftar is pursuing a coup attempt. Airstrikes hit a migrant center in the Libyan capital overnight, injuring two people. The UN Refugee Agency says some 3,460 refugees and migrants remain in detention centers near conflict-affected areas. The World Health Organization says the assault by Haftar's self-styled Libyan army has killed 443 people and injured another 2,110, with 60,000 forced to flee their homes. Neighboring countries have backed Botswana's controversial plan to lift a ban on hunting elephants, despite misgivings from conservationists. Botswana called a summit to discuss the impact of the elephant population. Heads of states from Namibia, Zambia, and Zimbabwe attended. From Gaborone, Botswana, reporter Martin Nguena has the details.
Five Southern African countries attended an elephant summit in the resort town of Kasane in northwestern Botswana on Tuesday. Namibia, Zambia and Zimbabwe all sent their heads of state, while Angola was represented by its tourism minister. The five countries are part of the Kavango, Zambezi, Kaza, Transfrontier Conservation Area, where 60% of the world's elephants reside. Botswana President Mokgweetsi Masisi called the meeting in the wake of plans by his government to reintroduce trophy hunting. It was banned in 2014 as one of the signature policies by his predecessor, Ian Khama. Gaborone authorities argue the ban is necessary to control the elephant herd, estimated at more than 130,000, against Botswana's carrying capacity of 55,000. Botswana says trophy hunting has economic benefits for local communities and is needed to reduce human and wildlife conflict. Conservationists argue that lifting the ban will see elephant numbers decline. The CASA countries are pushing for the right to start trading in ivory, a motion which would be tabled at the upcoming CITES meeting in Sri Lanka in June. Masisi says they expect resistance, particularly from the West.
Of course, we should anticipate that the proposal to uplist our elephants will be vigorously opposed. Yes, you can applaud. Unless you may not have heard me, I will say it again. Of course, we should anticipate that the proposal to uplist our elephants will be vigorously opposed.
Zimbabwe President Emmerson Mnangagwa says it is imperative that revenues from elephants and the byproducts benefit communities. He says they should reject CITES' one-size-fits-all approach, which does not benefit the CASA states.
The one-size-fits-all approach of banning everything under CITES, disregarding the good efforts and investments by our respective governments, is neither sustainable nor desirable. We must reject it.
Zimbabwe is the second largest population of elephants at 80,000. Namibian President Hage Geingob says the CASA state's conservation measures have to be applauded as they have contributed to the rise in wildlife numbers.
Our success is now our problem, because we are managing properly. That's why we have a problem. So Europeans must now a little bit come and be humble and learn from us how we are managing these things.
Meanwhile, Botswana, Namibia, Zambia and Zimbabwe all agreed to help Angola restock its elephant herd following years of civil war. Angola's elephant population dwindled from an estimated 70,000 before the war to just over 3,400 in 2015. For VOA, this is Martin Ngwenya in Gaborone, Botswana.
Past the hour, you're listening to African News Tonight on The Voice of America. Rising costs have strained parents and guardians in Zimbabwe as they tried to ensure their children could resume classes. Reporter Kuzai Zinawashi has details.
Edgar Kunambura is a parent of two girls in primary school. He says ensuring that they return to class with their peers after a month-long holiday has been a challenge.
I think you would understand that things are quite difficult given the incessant price hikes. So it's like we just have to try our best in the most difficult of times. To be honest, it's not like we are trying to manage everything, like the price of textbooks, the price of the exercise books and the fees as well, they've been increased.
Most schools have doubled their fees from the previous term. As a result, a majority of Zimbabweans are having a difficult time coping with the continuous price hikes that are not offset by salary hikes. Obet Masaraure is the president of the Amalgamated Rural Teachers Union of Zimbabwe. He says teachers also feel the bite of price hikes.
Both the parent and the teacher are incapacitated. The teacher can't travel back to the working place. The teacher can't afford to buy teaching material. The teacher can't afford to send their own kids to school. For the parents themselves, they are failing to secure the school fees. Under such circumstances, the state of preparedness of the learner is highly compromised. Their morale is low, psychologically they are affected. They don't have the basics to use in schools.
He adds that the burden of parents with children in boarding schools is even worse. Some schools are asking parents to contribute groceries. Some private schools also have asked parents to pay school fees in US dollars, although the current is scarce in Zimbabwe. Adding to these demands, Masaraure says schools have been trying to pressure parents to pay school fees up front.
We received a report from schools where they are turning away learners back home to collect the fees, which is against government policy, of course. They are also trying to use the route of summoning some parents to take them to court, but they are summoning a parent who doesn't even have a court or anything.
Masaraure says taking the legal route often does not yield any results. He adds that on Tuesday, there was a low turnout of learners when schools reopened because of the prevailing economic hardships. The prices of goods and services in Zimbabwe have continued to rise in the recent months. As inflation continues, people's income or salaries have not kept pace, leaving a majority of Zimbabweans in an uncomfortable situation. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashe from Harare.
The Ugandan singer and legislator known as Bobby Wine has vowed to continue using music to denounce longtime President Yoweri Museveni. Wine received a hero's welcome late last week after spending 3 nights in prison over a street protest. But as Halima Atumani reports from Kampala, his music increasingly faces stiff controls from the state.
We are fighting for freedom. We are living in a time similar to the one of slave trade. This operation is worse than appetite.
Bobby Wine has been singing and entertaining Ugandans since he was a teenager. Now 37 and a member of parliament, his songs today carry a political message. Wine, whose real name is Robert Chagurani, says it's time for the country's young people to awaken and challenge President Museveni.
Our message has been primarily a message of mental emancipation, of knowing that Ugandans are actually the owners of this country and the leaders must do everything they do in the benefit of the people, which is not the case here today.
It's rare that Wine gets to sing these days. Since 2017, more than 120 planned of his concerts have been cancelled by the police, who says his management failed to meet minimum security standards required to host revelers. To stop his concerts, police have used arrests and tear gas to clear the crowds. Wine supporters, such as Chifampa Nsambu, are not happy.
He's singing about the Ugandan who is suffering, and he's talking about the reality on ground. Those who are living in posh houses and posh cars, moving in AC cars, they do not feel the situation that is happening here. But it is the government that is destroying the peace that is here.
Under house arrest, the musician once again turned to his music to send a message to the police.
You're breaking my hand, officer. I'm not fighting you, my brother. Why are you hurting me?
Why you beating me? Na missing at the fault in our way. Why you kicking me?
His message, I am fighting for you and not against you. Days later, he was arrested again on charges of unlawfully engaging in a protest against Uganda's 2018 social media attacks. He was released on bail. Political analyst Miriam Matembe says the message of Bobby Wine's music helped get him elected to the legislature.
They elected him because they believe in what he stands for. Now, why should you brutalize him, torture him, simply because you fear that he's threatening your position as the president of Uganda.
Solomon Sirwanyi, deputy chief whip of the ruling National Resistance Movement Party, says he does not have a problem with Wine as long as he can differentiate between music and politics.
Of course, as a musician, I support Bobby Wine so much. I love the music, I support his music. But as a president of Uganda, of course, I don't support him. I support President Museveni because I believe he still has a vision for this country.
During the 2011 election campaign, President Museveni's team created a song of a rhyme he made during a speech.
Today, these young people taught me about this rap because I was not following what they were saying. You want another rap?
We are the youngest population in the world, we stand a chance. We are the leaders of the future, and the future is today.
Museveni isn't competing with Bobby Wine on music stage, but he will have to test his popularity next to Museveni in the political arena if the legislator decides to run for president in 2021. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Kampala.
Zimbabwe's President Emmerson Mnangagwa recently reappointed John Mangudya for a second and final 5-year term as central bank governor. The move has been met with widespread public condemnation. Adigando gives us more on the story.
Zimbabwe is in the grip of a severe shortage of dollars that has forced the country to struggle to import food and medicines for hospitals. In what political analysts say is a vote of confidence in his team at the Treasury, President Emmerson Mnangagwa has appointed Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe Governor John Mangudya for a second five-year term. While some analysts expected Mangudya to be retained, critics say doing so continues the bad practices of former President Robert Mugabe's regime. Zimbabwe's economy and industry have been in crisis for more than a decade, largely because of the economic policies of the ruling ZANU-PF party. Its monetary policy established a surrogate currency called the bond note. However, the notes trade at a low level against foreign currencies such as the U.S. dollar and the rand. Economic analyst James Joa weighs in on the concerns about Mangudya's reappointment.
To me, this was not surprising because you have seen it before. Not that he has been doing a stealing job, far from it, but it is how the ZANU-PF system is supposed to operate. It rewards failure, it rewards incompetence. It pays in that system to be a total disaster. Look all over around what's happening in this country. We are facing a very dire situation where inflation is gone out of control. We're actually in a hyperinflationary environment, given the influx of treasury bills.
Joa sees Mangudya's reappointment as a sign of government's unwillingness to fix the economy. The central bank has been criticized for overreaching in its mandate and supplanting the finance minister by issuing treasury bills to finance the presidential inputs program, which provides support for farmers and making money available to buy luxury vehicles for top officials. Joa says the economy is easier to pillage in its current state.
You would expect that under such circumstances, the system, the authorities that be would try another hand to see if that hand would steer the ship better, but that has not been the case. The other also challenge that we have is that we have a reserve bank that has totally failed in its mandate as the lender of last resort. But we have a reserve bank that operates as an extension of the Minister of Finance, as if it's actually the Minister of Finance, and that causes a lot of problems. They come up with quasi-fiscal projects that leads to high money supply growth and inflation. And we have seen the government or the ZANU-PF system taking advantage of that.
Mangudya was first appointed to the post in 2014 under the regime of President Mugabe, who was ousted in 2017. His term was marred by the bank's controversial decision to introduce the surrogate bond note currency in 2016 in a bid to end a severe shortage of US dollars and cash. Despite the public outcry, Mangudya pushed ahead, declaring that if the surrogate currency failed to remain at par with the US dollar, he would resign. Reginald Shoko is an economic analyst in Bulawayo.
Largely a public opinion view of the fact that the bond note failed and he did not resign. That further increases the deficit of the trust and confidence people have in the banking institutions. As the steward of the banking sector and with the current trajectory of currency, forex strategies that manifest themselves around the issues of trust and confidence, one would have expected the government and especially the president to appoint a new central bank governor.
Political analysts say Mangudya's appointment deepens Zimbabwe's crisis of confidence in the banking system. They say the government's unpredictability regarding monetary policy has caused many Zimbabweans to see the value of their savings wiped out more than once. Reporting for VOA, this is Adi Gondo.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington.
VOAAfrica.com.
On VOAAfrica.com.
The news updates never stop. Our primary goal is to keep you informed.
VOAAfrica.com, your trusted source for news and information.